Hey everyone, welcome back to Dad Space. We're having a guest on that was on one of my other shows, Living the Next Chapter, episode 276. JD McCabe was on, and we talked about his book, The Third Gift, My Dance with the Devil and Her Mother. And JD was on the podcast, and we talked about his new book. And when I left that recording with my guest, I saw some similarities that are happening within my own family. And I wanted the opportunity to come on and talk all things dad with JD on this podcast and talk about another side that goes along with that episode of Living the Next Chapter. And I'm so thrilled that JD has agreed to come back and address us as dads and talk about his book and his story. JD, welcome back to the podcast. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Dave. And thank you again for another opportunity to be back with you and your listeners. I appreciate it very much.
It's exciting. So for those who haven't met you yet, again, episode 276, Living the Next Chapter, we get into the story behind the book and more about the book itself. Let's bring people up to speed who haven't caught that episode yet on a little bit about this background to your book and why you wrote the book and a little history of the story behind your relationship and your family.
Sure. And I will try to tie that up as neatly as I can. But yeah, as you mentioned, the title is The Third Gift, My Dance with the Devil and Her Mother. And it was an unimaginable journey, quite frankly, after being in what I would describe at the time, because I have a different perspective now, but what I would describe at the time, a stable and happy marriage for 17 years. And then the wheels came off. And the third gift would be where the discoveries were. And I thank God for the third gift every day because it gave me a sense of emotional freedom. But long story short, after 17 years of stability, started being subtly accused by her of infidelity, drug addiction, things that were just so far removed from what, you know, who I was. And then those spiraled into gaslighting and projection and more consistent emotional and psychological abuse. And essentially she broke me down, hollowed me out as a man. And I allowed that. And when I say I allowed that, I isolated myself from family and friends. I told nobody what was going on. So I would spend, 9 days across two different psychiatric facilities. I had been involuntarily committed. And then once we separated is where I would make the discovery of, hidden prescription drug abuse on her part. I would discover that she had been, chronically exposing me to arsenic. And then we'd go through an alimony trial and a domestic violence trial. And the domestic violence trial, again, it was all trumped up. And the crazy system that we have here in the U.S., the court system, I don't know how it is in Canada, but it's a non-pleading. North Carolina is a non-pleading state, so you can go in and say whatever you want. So she made, again, the same accusations that I'm abusing prescription drugs and alcohol. And she dragged my daughter into court to potentially testify against me. And fortunately, the judge removed her from the courtroom because she was a minor. They allowed her back in if they were going to put her on the stand, but they never put her on the stand. So it was, I dealt with poisoning, psychological, emotional abuse, psychiatric lockup, domestic violence trial, and then a 4-day alimony trial. So there was a ton of darkness and a ton of disappointment and betrayal along the way. But in the end, I would figure out that everything that she had been accusing me of doing, she was actually doing. So the third gift was an accusation that she made that through our attorneys that I gave her sexually transmitted herpes. It led to me diving into her medical claims and claims, and that's where I discovered a 5-year pattern of hidden prescription drug addiction. She was using our kids for 2 years to fill amphetamines in their names through the same family practitioner that had me involuntarily committed. So I was misdiagnosed with bipolar 2 and so forth, so on. So, we went from semi-stable and happiness to the depths of hell. And it was a long journey for 4 or 5 years. And through the course of that, as you know, she alienated. Fortunately, my son was away at college when all this transpired, so he was somewhat removed from it. But my daughter was living in the home. She was 15, 16 at the time, and vulnerable. And I was alienated from her for 2 years, about a year when I was still in the home. And then a year after that. And as I mentioned to you before, it's one of my favorite chapters in the book, titled Hi Daddy, when she came back into my life. But my now ex essentially used both of our kids as weapons against me, and, you know, filled their heads with the fact that your dad has a drug problem. He's got mood issues, anger issues, so forth, so on. And she went so far to go to them to say, I have positive proof that your father has cheated on me. He gave me herpes. This was before I had my negative test. I mean, once I tested negative, and I want to be clear, I've tested negative for everything. But once I tested negative, we sat on that for about a month so that the private eyes could do their work and see if we could come up with who she was running around with. But it was that accusation that has provided me emotional freedom today. And fortunately, I've got a tremendous relationship with both of my kids. My daughter, as I mentioned, you know, came back into my life because she was old enough to see the truth for herself. And she had one of her very best friends that said, look, you need to reach out to her father, your father. But she cut me off. She wanted nothing to do with me. And I had very limited communication with her, if any. So I don't wish that on anybody, but it's the thing that bothers me the most. It bothers me that I lost 2 years of my daughter's life. I missed two birthdays. I missed her 16th birthday because I was in a psych facility. And then her 17th birthday, she wanted absolutely nothing to do with me. But I did, you know, make sure to get her a card and get her a little bit of a gift. But I took it to her school. I took it to her school and left it at the front desk. This was under the advisement of my therapist at the time, because I knew had I mailed it to the home, it either would have been thrown out or she would have never have received it.
Right.
Yeah. So for anybody that's going through it, I know the hole that you feel. And my therapist at the time, it's a matter of preparing yourself with the appropriate expectations to go, you know, I don't know when she may come back into my life. My therapist said, look, it may not be until college. And the only angle you may have there is when she comes to you for financial support and to potentially, you know, help pay for her college or whatever the case may be. She said that will be your opening to say, look, I'm not going to provide and support for you financially if you want nothing to do with me, you know. So, but she said, just prepare yourself. I have no idea when she may come back into your life. And so I'm thankful to God every day for the fact that she was old enough to see that there's something wrong with mom. So she came home from high school and mom couldn't walk and she couldn't talk and there was dog food all over the floor. But I knew from watching her medical claims and pharmacy claims, and I watched them like a hawk after we separated, I knew that she was in a drug withdrawal. Mm-hmm. And she not only was on three different formulations of amphetamines, but mood stabilizers and benzodiazepines and very dangerous combination of pills. But yeah, I'll never forget the day that my dad was traveling in DC for business and I received the text that I'd been hoping and praying for. She knew I was in DC. And when I was traveling, even though she wasn't talking to me, I'd let both my kids know where I'm at. And she must have forgot that I was in DC, but reached out to me and said, you know, are you home? And I said, no, you know, I'm in DC. I'll be home in a couple of days. And I said, is everything all right? And she said, yeah, never mind. And I said, was everything all right? And she said, I want to see you. And I had to step out of the meeting room. It was a large conference that I was in. I had to step out and, you know, cry my eyes out in a men's bathroom, the day that I'd hoped and I had prayed for. I didn't know where it would go, you know, but I knew just seeing her again would be a huge step in the right direction. But it was a week later that she decided she wanted to move in with me into my little apartment. And I intentionally got a 2-bedroom apartment because I, just in case this day would come, that I'd have a place for her to stay.
And so the dads that are in this holding pattern for you 2 years, for me, I'm in a holding pattern right now with my relationship with my daughter.
Yeah.
What kind of words of wisdom, now that you're on this side of it, can you give to people like me who are being blocked in our communication with our daughter? We've gone from a really happy, healthy home to disconnection, and we're in that holding pattern, just like kind of like an airplane circling the airport, waiting for permission. We don't know if it's ever going to happen. We're running out of gas. We need to land this plane. What do we do?
Yeah, it's a great analogy. It's, my advice to anybody on that is, again, manage the expectations, and you don't know when there will come a time where she needs you guys again. You know, God forbid it's nothing tragic or traumatic or whatever. There will come a time. So one of the last communications that I had with my daughter, again, we were estranged, was I just sent her a text message. You know, she wouldn't even take my phone calls. And I do recount one phone call, and I left a lot of this out of the book because wasn't going to write about my journey with my daughter in the book. I wanted to shield her from that. But, you know, I remember calling her one time. I called her two or three times in a row. I wasn't harassing her. And she finally picked up, and I said, I just wanted to hear your voice. And she said, well, you've called me so many times. I said, well, I just wanted to hear your voice, and I just wanted to tell you I love you. But then I sent her a text message saying, look, I don't understand your position, but I will respect your position, and I will give you whatever space you need. But just know that I am here for you, you know, no matter what. And I love you unconditionally, and I hope and pray for the day that we can begin to rebuild our relationship. I'm like, look, I'm going to respect what you want. Yeah. I don't agree with it, but I'll respect it. And, you know, I had some significant guidance from my therapist as well. So, and I wrote her a letter at the same time. This was for her 17th birthday. I don't know that she ever read it or ever received it. It was in her card. She probably chucked it, but, I wrote a letter, heartfelt letter, laying out my thoughts and expressing my love for her. And, you know, recognizing just the difficulties of the situation that they're going through. But I didn't plead with her to believe me, or I didn't bash her mother. And as cold and lonely as it can be, I stayed on the high road. It was hard. It was hard to do, especially when your character is being assassinated.
Right.
And she's being told things that are just absolutely not true. But I stayed on the high road, and I didn't attack her mother. And when they both read the book, and my son stayed in my life. He was away at college, and you know, I maintained a real good relationship with him. But when they both read the book, that's exactly what they said to me. They said, man, Dad, you shielded us from so much. I had no idea you were going through all of this. And so I stayed on the high road. I ripped my tongue out. I didn't bite it. I ripped it out. Because I certainly didn't want to attack her or attack my kids. And it was very difficult. Very, very difficult.
Any bitterness during the process of being disconnected from your family in this way? Because sometimes I kind of lean towards, you know, like, why is this happening? Why, like, I get a little bit angry in a sense that this is my state in life right now. Why is this happening? And I have no control. I just feel like I'm a passenger in someone else's car. I can't do anything but just be along for the ride right now. Where I used to be dad, I used to be super dad. I used to be everyone under one roof and all in my home. And now it's all different. So how do you keep from being bitter?
I journaled a lot, you know, and I journaled a lot to put that anger and emotions down on paper. It was very, very helpful for me to do that. And I think it may be worthwhile for you or others that are going through it, and whether it's a letter or whatever, just to share what's on your heart and leave it there with her. Not driving guilt or anything, but just exactly what you just said. I used to be super dad. I missed being a dad. I missed the cohesiveness that we had. I missed whatever conversations we used to have. Just know that, you know, I have a hole in my heart right now. And again, it's not about making them feel guilty, but letting them know that, you know, how deeply you care and love for them. But yeah, there was my bitterness and my anger. And in your situation or somebody else's situation, it should be directed at the person that's causing this rift. But my bitterness and anger was directed at my ex-wife.
Yeah.
Not because of what she was doing to me, but because of what she's doing to my kids, because I knew that they were going to have, and my daughter is still in therapy periodically, you know, 4 or 5 years later, you know, as she's going through significant milestones in her life, from graduating from college to being engaged to soon to get married. Mom's no longer around, which is a good thing from my perspective and from their perspective. But I was angry at her selfishness, not my daughter's, but my ex-wife's, that these kids are going to have to carry that burden the rest of their lives.
How do you deprogram? You get that message from your daughter that she wants to reconnect. And I can't imagine the joy of seeing that on your phone for the first time. I'm kind of with you in the bathroom and hearing you in the stall and wanting to support you in that moment. But how do you rebuild a relationship after 2 years of silence and communication and programming happening from one side that's false, and you have to now kind of rebuild that relationship? Where do you even start?
Again, I'll never forget our first visit, the embrace and not wanting to let her go. And we spent, you know, an hour and a half together. And excuse me, I didn't focus on this. I told her, I said, I don't want to talk about the situation or what's going on, you know, with your mother and I and all that stuff. You know, I said, it's in God's hands. It'll be done when he wants it to be done. But I focused on her. And we spent some time. And this is crazy, Dave. You know, I was uncomfortable asking my daughter to come back to my apartment, you know, because of all that she had been told. But we went to a Starbucks. It was packed. There was nowhere to, she wanted a Starbucks. So I met her there. It's right down the road from my apartment. So I said, hey, listen, are you comfortable coming back to my apartment? You know, I'd like to, maybe you can go back to see my apartment. We can sit and talk. We sat and talked for an hour and a half, and she just brought me up to speed with what's going on in her life through pictures. You know, everybody takes pictures of everything these days. So we spent an hour and a half to 2 hours going through her phone and her laptop, just looking at pictures of things in her life that I missed, birthday parties, you know, talked about the young gentleman she was dating at the time and school and college. I mean, she was towards the tail end of her junior year and I wasn't involved in college visits and all that stuff. So I just got caught up on all of that. But I didn't focus on the negativity. And it wasn't until, excuse me, after she, you know, again, a week later, she made the decision and she, you know, she had to make an adult decision at a very young age to say, look, she moved her own stuff out. You know, she didn't have, she grabbed all her clothes and whatever. And a girlfriend helped her grab whatever she needed to grab from mom's and threw it in a car and, you know, moved in with me. But it was at that point, you know, a couple weeks later that she was asking me some very pointed questions, you know, about what is going on with mom. And I laid out some of the discoveries. You know, she knew about the herpes because she was told I gave her herpes.
Yeah.
She didn't know about the drug addiction. She's a very direct young lady. And I was talking about, you know, my concerns and what I discovered. And she says, I want to see it. I want to see the proof. And I showed her. I showed her the pharmacy claims and all that stuff to say, look, this is why your mom's acting the way she's acting.
Wow.
And I didn't discover yet at that point that she was using our kids for 2 years because her source, as I would call him, a physician, but he was being watched by the DEA and North Carolina Medical Board for inappropriate prescribing of narcotics. And ultimately they shut him down, I think, for about a year. So she had to find another source. And she used our kids for a couple of years until she could find a psychiatrist that would write her whatever the hell she wanted. So, but I consistently shielded her from what was going on, all the legal stuff that was going on. She would ask accordingly. Yeah. Occasionally she would ask and I would simply tell her, look, let's just focus on you and I. Let's focus on your senior year. And we are extremely close, you know. And now she lives in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and my son lives in Montana, but we talk all the time. We get together as much as we can. But I tried to take the high road. And even when she was with me, you know, you want to vindicate yourself, right? I didn't. I wanted to make it as much about her and establish as much normalcy, you know, as I could. And of course, then she starts getting blazed up by her mother for the decisions, you know, she's made. And right. So so forth, so on. So it was, yeah. And yeah, she moved back in with me. Let's see when, yeah, she moved back in with me about 3 or 4 months before the alimony trial started, you know, and that started her, our alimony trial started her first day of her senior year.
Mm-hmm.
End of August in 2016. But, yeah. And then, you know, I come from a large family and I'm so proud of my large family and how they handled it. And then they knew how she was treating me. They knew the abuse I was not only enduring from her, but from, you know, her mother.
Yeah.
But one of the visits up to Pennsylvania, just all of her cousins just embraced her and asked no questions and whatever. And the other thing that I never asked, and it's not important to me. Maybe it is. I don't know. I'm still sorting through it. But I never asked my daughter for an apology.
Interesting.
It wasn't important for me to hear from her, "Dad, I'm sorry."
Mm.
I mean, when I say she was flat out nasty to me, she was flat out nasty to me. And unjustifiably so, but an apology wasn't, it didn't matter, because I recognized the fact that she was young, she was vulnerable, she was dealing with a master who was able to take my head and twist it. And you can imagine what she successfully did to a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Till the 16-year-old was fortunately old enough to see it for herself and go, something's not right here. But again, she still is in therapy periodically and sorting through it. And with respect to the relationship with her mother, they don't have one, but I always told them I will support whatever type of relationship you might want to have with your mother.
The one part that caught me from your story when we talked on Living the Next Chapter, and we kind of talked a little bit here, was that period of silence where you had information, things are happening in the background to finalize the facts, and you're not allowed to talk about it to your kids, but you're getting just decimated by the other side with rumors and not things that are not factual, and you can't even defend yourself while you wait for the process to unfold. That's got to be so hard. I would be like slamming the cards on the table, like, "Aha, look what I found." And you can't, you got to hold back and just let things happen as your character is decimated. Looking back at it, how did you do that?
To be honest with you, I mean, it's just a lot of prayer and just sitting with it, becoming comfortable with it. You know, I'm thinking through it. I mean, it's like, as I'm kind of flashing back to some of the stuff. I remember the first night. So we had our first mediation. This is when the grenade was dropped that, you know, I gave her sexually transmitted herpes, so forth, so on. I remember my daughter called me that night. I hadn't heard from her. And my phone rings and it's her. I'm like, "Oh, wow, this is great. She's calling me." And, yeah, she said, "I heard today didn't go so well, Dad." She was talking about so again, her mother would tell her everything. "I heard today didn't go so well, Dad." And I said, "Yeah, it was not a good day." And I do remember saying to her, "I love you very much. And one day," I said, "I don't know when, but one day the truth will be revealed." And she said to me, "I already know the truth, Dad." And that was the end of our conversation that night. And I'm like, wow. Yeah. So, I mean, there was nothing restricting me legally from talking to them. Right? It wasn't a legal strategy or anything like that, but it's just like, no, I'm not going there. I'm not going to, you know, I could have sent them over. I could have sent them a screenshot of my negative test results. But I will say, when she moved back in with me, and again, we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about it. It was impossible not to because of all the stuff that was going on, but we didn't talk a lot about it. But I remember showing her my drug tests because I had been drug tested for a possible employment job before any of this all started. And then when I went into the psychiatric facility, of course, I was thoroughly tested, drug tested. And then my psychiatrist at the time, once I got out, did a look back drug test, taking hair and nail off me, hair and nail samples, because he wanted to see if drugs were involved with my mood disorder. I can smile about it now because I didn't have one. I was moody because I was being gaslit and everything else, but it wasn't anything medically derived. But I remember showing her, you know, I'm like, all right, so, because she said it nicely, but she said, you know, Dad, Mom told me that you were in that psych facility because of depression and a drug addiction. And I said, well, I've been tested multiple times and I can show those to you if you'd like to see those. And so I showed her my negative drug test. And she says, yeah, no, Mom said that I showed them to her. She said, no, Mom said that you deny it, but you've tested positive for drugs. And I'm like, no, I've never had a positive test for drugs. And as a matter of fact, I've had 3 drug tests. And that's when I showed those to her. And again, it was a nice exchange. It wasn't nasty, but yeah. I can imagine just all the questions running through both of their heads. You know, after all, Dad spent 9 days in a psych facility. So who the hell do we believe? You know?
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely, I needed to restore my identity. And I wasn't going to do it. I wasn't going to do it by bashing their mother or by throwing stones back or whatever. And of course, the whole time, because I think the subtitle's perfect, and her mother, because her mother, yes, her mother got involved, boy. And interestingly enough, you know, Grandma, rest her soul, turned her back on the kids too. You know, so that they there's, I think my son's fine with it, but I'm sure my daughter's probably still processing that because they were extremely close to their grandmother. Yeah, she turned their backs on them too. So. Which was perfect. I mean, it needed to happen. They needed the toxicity out of their lives.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. So the dad's listening to this conversation. Obviously, you need to go to buy the book because, or listen to the audiobook like we are. My wife and I are enjoying it so much. But for those that are in a situation and they're finding some similarities to our conversation, if I got out of the way for a moment, just hand you the keys to the podcast, it's your podcast now. What would you like to say to an audience that's resonating with what you have lived through and are still living through, and they see elements of themselves in you and your story? The keys are yours. It's your podcast now. I'm out of here. What do you want to say to that community? And speaking directly to them as they're listening, because the one thing about podcasts, nobody knows what they're listening to right now. They could be listening to music. They could be listening to the weather. But they're listening to this conversation in a very tense environment in their home. And their partner doesn't know they're listening to this conversation. Their kids don't know. And this person in this situation is at the end of their rope. Nobody believes them anymore. They feel completely alone. And they're just grasping for help. Your book's going to help. Your story's going to help. But now they get to hear from the person behind the book.
Yeah.
You directly to them. I'm out of the way. The keys are yours. Your show. What do you want? What do you want to say to the person listening right now in their earbuds?
Well, thank you. I will gas up the car before I bring it back. But
good.
I would say, and I've thought about this a lot. I would say the mind, the mind is where the battle begins. If you can control your mind, and you have to, I had to reset my mind's frame every hour some days, you know. The mind is where the battle begins. You've got a couple of options. You can mire in self-pity, which on occasion I did, or you can look at yourself as a victim and you can constantly ask the questions why, or you can count the blessings and count what you have. Gratitude. I mean, simply put, you can be a victim or you can be grateful. And again, there are still some days today that I have to sit down and physically write down what I am grateful for and the blessings that I have in my life. Focus on what you have versus what you've had lost or what you've had taken away from you. And again, so it's about gratitude and you have to reset it. And then the other thing I would say is, instead of asking why, focus on the what. Why is a circular question? And I stopped asking why when all this began, probably a couple of weeks in. And I remember I was in church. I remember saying, look, I'm not going to ask why anymore. I'm just going to simply say, let your will be done, but walk with me. And to those that are struggling or in difficult situations, I would say focus on what you can learn from it. You know, there is a purpose for it. What can you learn from it? What can you do with it? Where can you find a renewed sense of purpose because of the pain? And know that brighter days are coming. I don't know when. It took me a long time to find peace. And again, some days I have to recalibrate around that peace. I will tell you, I don't know if you've seen the Trevor Bauer story out there, but his baseball career was ruined by a lady that lied. And it triggered me a little bit yesterday because I'm like, yeah, these systems are screwed up. So yesterday, man, of all days, I had to sit down. And again, I got out a pen and a piece of paper and I wrote down all that I'm grateful for, because I felt the emotion stirring up in me that, oh yeah, it's exactly what I went through. Yeah, I wasn't making millions like Trevor Bauer, but she traipsed through the court system and made up a story and no facts, no evidence, whatever, and totally assassinated my character. And most importantly, assassinated my character with my kids. Mm-hmm. So I had to regroup and I had to sit down and figure that out. But again, it's a mindset shift to go, okay, I know this sucks, but I don't have it as bad as others have it. And what do I have to be grateful for and thankful for and all the blessings and lay those out. And all you can do is hope. If you're in a situation where you've been alienated or estranged from a kid, a child, stay on the high road. Stay on the high road and hang on to hope.
Any thoughts for kids who are caught in the middle between what they're being told and what's facts and what's fiction, and they believe who they believe at the time and it's all they know? They know what they hear, and but they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
For a kid caught in the middle of all of this, who happens upon a podcast around this topic, and they're alienated from their mother or father in the process. Any thoughts on rebuilding relationship with your parent as it unfolds?
Yeah, I guess it depends on the age, right?
Yeah.
Again, one of my blessings is I'm just so thankful that my kids were the age they were when all this happened. They were older. She was old enough to see it. You know, you talk about an 8 or 10 year old there. Yeah. Again, that's God. I can't even imagine that. But it might be 6, 7, 8, 9 years before they go, you know what? When they are old enough, age appropriate to be able to process it, I would say to get both sides of the story. Get both sides of the story. You owe that to the other parent, at least to you know, and you can grow from it. My therapist at the time leaned on a lot, Dave, and I will go back to your listeners to say, she said to me, kids are resilient. They're going to be fine. They're resilient. They're going to be fine. But she said, they will go as you go.
Interesting.
They will go as you go. They will be watching, you know, even though your daughter's not in your life, she's watching. And as you go, they will go. If you show strength and you maintain and stay on the high road and continue to be a man of integrity, they will recognize that. And boy, have they. There are some letters in the book, too, that my kids wrote to me when they got back into my life. You know, they heartfelt. I've got a couple of them, you know, framed and hanging on my bedroom wall.
Nice.
And the letter my daughter wrote to me left. she had a neighbor taped to the door. I took her to college. My son and I, you know, we drove her to college, long drive, 9 hours away. And then when I got back that night, I had a text from my neighbor next door, said, look, I taped something to your front door. A beautiful letter from my daughter. And in there, she echoed the sentiments of strength and so forth, so on. And And it's, I mean, I bawled my eyes out that night too, but that letter's in the book too. So these letters are in the book. They're raw and they're real. And at the end of the day, all we have is faith and all we have is hope. And I don't focus too much time on why questions, because you're never going to sort it out. But I will say to anybody out there, and as I said to you, if you're estranged from a child, the relationship is broken, just let them know what's on your heart, but do it with warmth and compassion. And just let them know and leave it there. Respect that they want space or whatever the case may be, but they need to recognize the hole that's in your heart and the things that you miss and the things that you cherished, and you hope and pray that one day you'll be able to, you know, get back to that and rebuild on that. And I promise you, when that does happen, the relationship's going to be stronger. It will be stronger than it ever was before. And adversity is an opportunity. I've lived, every cliche has come true. I hate the cliches, but they've all come true.
Yeah.
Like, count your blessings. It's like we all say that, hey, count your blessings. But no, when you physically have to do it and write it down to reground yourself, I mean, otherwise you can spiral down into a very negative, self-destructive path. I'm not going to sit here and tell you my journey was perfect. You know, right. I didn't handle everything perfectly every day. But my life coach was looking in the mirror. You know, everybody wants to be a life coach and therapy's great and deacons and religious personnel are great and support is tremendous. But at the end of the day, we have to get in the ring. We have to take the punches. We have to run the race. People will be there on the sidelines supporting us, but we're the ones that have to put in the work. So I know I'm okay when I can look in the mirror and recognize you're okay. There were many mornings where I said, you were not okay. You need to do better. You know, you need to put the bottle down.
Yeah.
You need to stop self-medicating. So I will say that again, my journey wasn't perfect.
Right.
But So my guiding star was looking myself in the mirror and being okay with how I felt and my actions and what I've done.
Amazing. JD, I was really looking forward to this conversation again. There's direct relationship to this conversation for our own personal family,
yeah,
which has added a lot of value for me. You've given me some great perspective. And I really do appreciate the fact that you're so open and honest with your thoughts and feelings, and you have great insight. And again, this is something you can't get from a textbook in university. This comes from life.
Yeah.
And the fact that you've documented this story, your story in your book to help us, is, I just want you to know, it's beyond words.
Oh.
The impact of what you've shared, and it's having a direct impact on our personal family and our home.
Yeah.
It's in a different context, but the lessons that you're teaching through your story is having a direct relationship to us. So we're finding great value in it. And the audiobook, again, is another layer because we get to hear it. It's one thing to read a word, it's another way to hear it and hear the passion behind it and the crack in the voice and the pause, yeah, and there's something different there. So yeah, the audiobook is another great resource as well. So thank you.
I'm grateful to you for the opportunity. And again, as I think about your situation or anybody's situation, if there's other siblings involved, the other thing that I would say, I did not use my son to try to get my daughter back. So some people go that route, you know, talk to your sister, whatever, talk to your brother, da, 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 you know, if they're close and if they're not close. But I would say the same for the siblings in these situations who are also estranged from a sister or a brother's, be genuine and let them know what's on your heart. If you have something on your heart for that person, you know, let them know what void is in their lives because of it. But again, you don't do it with any guilt or, you know, but yeah, surround them with love. And that's what I do with my daughter. That's what I do with my daughter. I'm like, I'm going to make it about you. I'm not going to focus on what you did. I'm not going to hold you accountable for that.
Right.
And for forgiveness. That'd be the other thing which I forgot. So, I mean, the mindset for me, as I said, the mind is where the battle begins. It was about forgiveness and it was about gratitude. And, hell, I've had to forgive not only my ex-wife and ex-mother-in-law, but I had to forgive attorneys, judges, psychiatrists, because I went through all three systems. It was like going through a meat grinder, but, I mean, there's purpose to it. There's purpose to it. But I'm extremely grateful to you for this opportunity. I hope that you find some resolution. And again, it's just about managing expectations, recognizing I don't know when she may come back into our lives or what that may look like. But respect her space and let her know what void is in your life because of it and what you miss.
Yeah. So JD, where do we go to get more information about the book, the website, all that information too?
Yeah, there's the website is thirdgift.com because the third gift domain was taken, but thirdgift.com. But I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and now Threads on Instagram at thethirdgift.com. I've got the book is available if folks are interested in signed copies. I'll sign it and mail out a copy to them for $25. And they can just Venmo me at the third gift. Of course, it's available at Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Amazon, all your major online retailers. And as you mentioned several times, and I thank you for the purchase of the audiobook. And please, again, thank your wife. But there's an audiobook available, ebook available, paperback and hardcover. We have all the platforms covered. So,
yeah. Well done. Well done. Again, JD, so great to have you on the show. Again, if you want more about the story, and the book itself, Living the Next Chapter, episode 276, a great episode with JD. And we get really into the story there. But we really wanted to do just something highlighting dads and relationship with children in this episode. And JD, you more than covered that. So thank you for coming back for a round two with this audience. And I would really encourage you listening to jump over there to episode 276 and catch up where we left off, and you'll hear even more. And it's a great conversation over there as well.
Well, thank you very much, Dave. Again, I appreciate it.
Excellent. Everyone, check out the show notes. Everything's there for you so you can make contact with JD. And if you're looking for somebody to come and speak to your group, or you're looking for coaching or some advice and some help in life, I know JD's got a great heart to serve, and he's got a great story. So, JD, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to Dad Space today. I'm so thankful that you were here for this episode. If you like the show, please let another dad know. Hey, that kind of rhymed. Anyways, share the episode out with somebody in your circle who would love Dad Space. That means so much to us here for our guests who donate their time to be on the show. And we just want to see this grow. So, again, another rhyme. Oh, wow. Anyhow, I think I need to write a song or something. Thank you for being here with Dad Space. And again, looking forward to the next episode. Look forward to having you here again with us. And if we can help you in any way, if you have a great guest idea for the show, a topic that you would love us to cover, we would love to do that here on Dad Space. So thanks for listening, and thanks for being part of the community. And to you, Dad, thank you for listening, and thank you for sharing Dad Space. Catch you on the next one. Take care.